I'm Mark Bayshore. You've got Current State on WKAR. November was packed with important Michigan news. Recounts notwithstanding, a Republican presidential candidate prevailed for the first time in the state since 1988. A Michigan native has been nominated for Secretary of Education, and much-debated energy legislation moved forward at the state capitol. Let's unpack November with two guests. Emily Lawler covers Michigan government and other news for MLive. Welcome back, Emily.
Yeah, thanks.
And Zach Gorchow reports on the state at Gongwer News. Hi, Zach.
Good morning.
We'll presumably learn today about a presidential vote recount in Michigan launched by Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein. Now, the costs of such an endeavor is all over the news here today. Some say it could be exorbitant. Zach, who is saying what here?
Well, the state officially will charge Jill Stein $125 per precinct, which they are estimated to be just shy of $1 million. However, the Secretary of State, Ruth Johnson, is saying the actual costs are likely to be at least double that. That will come out of the taxpayer revenues. The Michigan Republican Party is all over this recount, criticizing it as a total waste of time, given the extreme unlikelihood it would change the result. And they're saying, hey, if a statewide election costs $10 million, why would this hand count of all the ballots cost less than
that?
Cost
a whole lot less, exactly.
Yeah. So the total started at $790,000 is what initially the state thought it was going to charge Jill Stein's campaign for this recount. That went up a little bit based on, I guess, some absentee precincts that were discovered. But, you know, the estimates are ranging, like Zach said, up to $10 million. So the Stein campaign will cover a portion of this, but the taxpayers are going to cover the rest.
Let's listen to a couple of prominent voices here, both for and against the recount. Here is GOP State Chair Ronna Romney McDaniel criticizing it.
This will cost our taxpayers, it will cost our counties, it will take time, it is disenfranchising our voters, and it is an outrage.
And here is Attorney Mark Brewer, former Democratic Party official, defending the recount idea.
Democracy is priceless. The integrity of our elections is priceless. And if one vote was not counted properly, that should be taken care of and fixed. And that's what this process is all about in the end.
So assuming Jill Stein does pursue the recount, what is going to happen when, Zach? How is this going to unfold?
Well, I believe the state has said, and it would be the state of Michigan that oversees the recount, that it would start the recount in the largest counties on Friday. And basically, they'd work straight through with the goal of getting it done by December 13th, because by law, Michigan's 16 electors are supposed to convene in the Michigan Senate chambers on December 19th to cast their votes. So you need to leave some cushion for legal challenges once the count is done. However, once, presuming Jill Stein does file for the recount, there are 7 days to file an objection to that. So there's a lot of stuff that could happen yet.
Let's go a little bit deeper there. How could a recount be stopped?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the first level is that the Republican Party or the Trump campaign could challenge that and try to get it stopped kind of at the administrative level. But
they'd have to appeal to the Board of State Canvassers, according to Fred Woodhams, who commented on this earlier this week from the Secretary of State's
office. Yep, and that's a split board. It has half Republicans and half Democrats. But, you know, that said, I think Republicans have had pretty good luck before that board in the past several years. So, but, you know, there's other ways. One of them, of course, would be a legal maneuver. There is some precedent, I guess, in the 2000 race down in Florida for kind of getting this to stop at a certain date. And then the other thing is just time. You know, if they run out of time, at some point the Electoral College, is going to meet on December 19th. And that's a pretty hard deadline for when this recount would have to be done by.
About 10,000 votes separated Donald Trump from Hillary Clinton here in Michigan. In the other states where recounts are being pursued, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, there was a 70,000 vote gap in Pennsylvania, a 20,000 vote gap in Wisconsin. Collectively, that's three stars that kind of have to align for any practical impact here, for any practical benefit for the Democrats, with the chances of a reversal apparently minuscule. What might the Democrats gain from this endeavor, Zach?
My silence is probably deafening right now. You know, this is a lot of people say this is a vanity effort by Jill Stein, an extension of a campaign that might, you know, have been a vanity effort. And to many Democrats would say cost Hillary Clinton the election.
I've heard other people say, though, that this is more publicity for the Green Party and the left.
Exactly.
Just because of that, then she probably got in the general election as a candidate for president.
I believe she's actually raising more money for this effort than she raised in the general election. Yeah. So,
I mean, this all started out of a very suspect, quote unquote, news article that raised the specter of tampering in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania with the vote totals. There's been no evidence of anything like that, just a lot of supposition, but that basically got the ball rolling for the Green Party to say, well, let's have a recount and see if there was in fact any funny business going on.
And oh, how the tables have turned here!
Exactly.
Because you know, during the campaign, Trump supporters were saying we're not sure we can trust the results.
Right.
Trump himself was up there saying he wasn't sure if he would accept the results unless he won. I guess that was a later disclaimer after the third debate. But you know, and Democrats are basically looking at them saying, "You people are crazy. Our election system can't be hacked. You know, a lot of these machines aren't even connected to the internet." Are you really supposing that someone could be paid to go in and hand tamper with, you know, thousands and thousands of precincts? And now it's Republicans who are saying, are you crazy? There's no way that in Michigan a 10,000 vote margin is going to swing the other way.
Emily Lawler of M Live, Zach Gorchow of Gongwer News here on Current State's Month in Review for November. Let's move to the lame duck session of the Michigan legislature, which began yesterday. Lots of chatter here about what we're apt to see, probably more about energy legislation than anything. Zach, remind our listeners, what's in front of the State House here? It's complicated,
yes.
But do your best.
All right. So the utilities, for some time, entities like DTE Energy and Consumers Energy have wanted a big change in the overall energy legal climate. They want more requirements for the alternative electric suppliers. These are entities that have a set limit of 10% of the market. The big utilities say, hey, look, you know, we have to take care of the grid for these people. You know, we have, you know, sometimes their customers come back to us. We have no way to plan around it. They want mechanisms in place to deal with that. The bill as it stands right now would increase the mandate on the percentage of fuel that has to come from your renewable sources from 10 to 15%. And it would set up a whole new process for the create regulatory scheme and creating new power plants.
Yeah, it's kind of an overhaul is how I've been referring to it. It has a lot of regulatory implications at the Michigan Public Service Commission level that that's the state agency that regulates utilities, and also some renewable implications, and kind of sets the direction that the state's energy future is going to go in here.
All of that said, there is significant support for this. Clearly, it cleared the Senate. Republican State Rep. Gary Glenn of Midland was here on Current State on Monday. Here's a little bit of what he was thinking then. He is an opponent.
I don't know what our odds are going in, but I do intend to seek significant amendments or try to stop it and wait a month and work with a new Republican administration in a new environmental climate.
And presumably he's referring to the future of the EPA under Donald Trump's appointee or maybe the reconfigured Michigan House. It could be either or it could be both. What do we know? I mean, the session just got started yesterday. What do we know about what's happening in the House Energy Committee right now?
Well, the bill's never going to make it to the House Energy Committee. They've decided to keep it on the floor of the House, which is, I think, a move to sort of prevent a core of pro-customer choice Republicans led by Mr. Glenn from causing problems for it in the committee. So it stays on the floor. That, you know, that's where the game is right now.
Okay, this is a very interesting development.
Yeah, and you know, the House Energy Policy Committee had already passed its own version of what it wanted energy policy to look like going forward. And they took months and months of hearings. So it's not as if they're not briefed on the issue, but the fact is it won't go through that committee process, which means there won't be an opportunity for more public input.
This is a move by Speaker Kevin Cotter?
Yes, it's his decision. I'm sure it was made in consultation with Eric Nesbitt, who is both the chair of the Energy Policy Committee
yeah.
and the majority floor leader of the House.
And we should expect, I mean, where's the smart money on this thing?
Well, I think the expectation is it will pass at this point. It's all, basically the question is, will the Republicans adhere to this rule where half of their caucus has to be behind a controversial piece of legislation? I think most people think if you put this bill up for a vote, it would pass. But there's been reticence about, say, passing something with minority Democratic votes and a handful of majority Republican votes. But I think the expectation is that it passes.
While we're on the legislative agenda, the topic of term limits came up again this month. It does pretty routinely here in Michigan, and that would be easing term limits. This was courtesy of our Republican state rep, Ed McBroom of the UP. Emily, what's going on?
Yeah, McBroom has essentially thrown some proposals on the table that range from, you know, completely eliminating term limits to reducing them to instituting some sort of a waiting period. You know, these are all options that have been bantered about in political circles for a while. And I will say that you said it, that we've heard some of these things before, and we tend to hear them in December, especially as the session is winding down and lawmakers are you know, getting ready to get out of town. But I don't see this being a huge push, and I also don't see it having a ton of grassroots really support. Obviously, Michigan voters voted for term limits. And, you know, I haven't heard from my readers, at least, any sort of a groundswell of a desire to eliminate them.
It would seem that the public might be skeptical of a proposal coming from the legislature, enabling them to stay in office longer.
Correct. You know, term limit reform is like the Bigfoot of legislation in Michigan. It's like always talked about, but never actually materializes. You know, this, as Emily said, right on point. This happens pretty much every 2 years in the lame duck session, because there are legitimate problems term limits causes. There's no question about it. But it's kind of a boutique issue. As Emily said, it is not something that has really galvanized the public, despite I think some high profile problems that term limits has contributed to. And how the legislature operates. There just seems to be no groundwork laid for this to happen now, and it would be a big surprise to me if it got traction.
Zach Gorchow of Gongwer News, Emily Lawler of MLive, it's current state's Michigan Month in Review. When I left here yesterday, I know I wanted to talk about the proposals for 401k-style retirement plans for Michigan educators. It turns out this morning we learned that the Senate is all set to vote to close the pension system to newly hired school employees and instead provide them solely a 401k in retirement. The chamber plans to approve the plan today once it clears a committee. Could you remind us what the basics are of this?
Yeah, essentially a few years ago, the legislature established what is now called a hybrid system for teacher retirement, meaning that new teachers were hired in at a plan that was a very small or a smaller pension or defined benefit plan plus a 401k style defined contribution plan. And, you know, some people, including the governor, think that's been working pretty well. However, there's a push from Republicans in the legislature to revisit that and maybe say, let's close the pension portion altogether. And instead of that, put everyone into a 401k style plan.
Proponents say this would beef up the finances. It would eliminate deficits in the future.
Right. There's a unfunded liability in the system. And they see this as, you know, going to a full 401k system as a way to deal with that and cut down on the unfunded liability. I mean, you see school districts continue to have to contribute a large portion of their budgets toward funding the pension plans. The state continues to contribute escalating amounts of money to pre-fund the pension plans, and The Republicans in the legislature see this as a way to curb that.
Donald Trump has appointed Betsy DeVos, a Michigan resident, to be the country's next education secretary. There's already been a lot of response to this, centering basically around Ms. DeVos's longstanding support for school choice and vouchers. But briefly, share your two cents worth here, Emily. What do you make of this?
Yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting pick on Trump's part because DeVos has a long history of education advocacy, but not necessarily a history of being involved in actually educating students. So I think among the education community, there are some very real fears because to some extent she's untested on a lot of issues, but for the public school community, the issues she is tested on, like vouchers and charters, are ones they don't agree with.
Yeah. Were you surprised by the pick, Zach?
Well, you know, I don't know that you could. I'm just not surprised by anything right now in the wake of the Trump election. I mean, anything is possible. But, you know, her worldview on education does align with what he talked about during the campaign. So in that sense, it's not surprising. You know, clearly he's taking a new sheriff in town approach. You know, this is somebody, President-elect Trump, who talked about, do we need a Department of Education at all at the federal level? So there's clearly going to be a lot of potential to expand what the federal government does to bolster school choice, charter schools. Would the federal government try to do something to have aid for students with that are going to private K-12 schools? Who knows? It's all on the table. That's pretty much what I thought of it.
Zach, have you followed this Wolf ruling with the along with a term limits discussion? You can also expect some other some other ruling involving wolf hunting here every few years in Michigan. We had one this month.
Yeah, it was the old title object clause of the Michigan Constitution, which says that a bill cannot basically embrace more than one purpose. Maybe the most toothless provision in the Michigan Constitution, usually roundly flouted with no legal consequences. Finally, the Michigan Court of Appeals decides, hey, you can't do that with this law. It said, well, there's a piece of this bill that essentially authorized the ability for a wolf hunt that embraced a different purpose. They threw the whole thing out. I suspect this is going to go to the Michigan Supreme Court, and this isn't the final word on it. But for the time being, it has taken away the legal authority for a wolf hunt. Of course, the federal government put the wolf back on the endangered species list, so that's been suspended anyways.
Basically, this gave the Natural Resources Commission and the legislature the authority to determine what animals could be hunted or otherwise.
Yes.
And this sent it in the other direction. Emily, going on 3 weeks ago now, a federal district judge in Detroit ruled that the state or the city of Flint, one or the other, or both, is on the hook to Flint residents impacted by the water crisis more than in the past. What did Judge David Larson rule exactly here?
Yeah, well, speaking of court rulings, he agreed with the plaintiffs who had argued that the state and the city should be delivering water to Flint residents, not just establishing these distribution centers where you can come and get water. The arguments are basically that some people aren't mobile or aren't able to get to such a distribution center. The state can't definitively prove that every resident who needs one has a filter. And at this point, Flint residents are still drinking filtered or bottled water. And the desired delivery amount, I believe, is 4 cases per day per person.
And how did state government respond to this, Zach?
Well, I believe they are appealing. They're saying it would take a Herculean effort to pull this off. It would require diverting other Flint resources.
$140 million price tag, I believe.
It would require diverting resources from other Flint water efforts to this. So they are fighting it at this point.
We want to thank both of our guests, Zach Gorchow of Gongwer News, Emily Lawler of MLive. It's been Current State's Month in Review. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.